Darkcast Network. Indie pods with a dark side.
Sometime in the pre-dawn hours of October 13th, 2018, a 16-year-old girl walked out of her family's home in Chalfont, California, and into the dark. It was a cold morning, but she wasn't wearing a jacket. She didn't take her glasses, and she left her phone and money behind. She left everything. The last person to see her inside the house was her stepmother, who says that she watched Carly Gousset lying in bed at 5:48 in the morning. But less than 2 hours later, Carly was gone. This is a case that has torn a family in half because some of the people who loved Carly most do not believe the story they've been told about that night. When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell the stories of those who never came home. Today, I want to tell you the story of Carly Gousset. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Welcome back, everyone.
Welcome back.
Thank you for joining us once again. I'm Kona.
And I'm Ethan.
And we're the husband and wife team behind this podcast. Each week, I tell you the story of an unsolved missing persons case. Ethan doesn't know anything about the case going into the episode and is here to provide his reactions and questions in real time, hopefully asking some of the same ones you have at home. This is the type of episode that is really difficult to write because it's chock full of internet rumors and accusations. Carly has been missing for over 7 years as of this recording, and speculation about what happened to her is everywhere online. The family members have also taken to social media to air their grievances and get out their own sides of the story. And frankly, it's a mess. Like, there was even a Dr. Phil episode, so when there's a Dr. Phil episode, like, you know, the whole thing's a mess. I've mentioned some of like the online stuff in this episode, but I've purposely left a lot of it out because it really just muddies the waters. But trust me, there are a ton of rabbit holes that you could go down should you desire. Before we get into it, though, we've had a few folks join us over on Patreon, so we'd like to take a moment to give them a shout out. Thank you to Teapop93, Brett V, and Kristen S. We really appreciate your support.
Thank you all so much.
As a reminder, if you'd like to get our episodes ad-free and early, you can join us over on Patreon at any level, starting at just $2 a month. You'll also get a free copy of the ebook that I wrote. Now, let's get into the story of Carly Gousset. Carly Lane Gousset was born on May 13, 2002, to Zachary Gousset and Lindsay Fairley. She was the second of two children and had an older brother, Kane. Her parents divorced when Carly was just about 2 years old. And for her early childhood, she and Kane lived with her mother. During that time, her father, Zachary, married. After he and his new wife, Melissa, had two children of their own, Cole and Cody, Carly and Kane moved in with their father and stepmother, Melissa, and the family settled in Bishop, California. By every account, Carly was a well-liked, normal teenager. Her mother, Lindsay, told Dateline, quote, "Everybody knows Carly. They love her. She is absolutely loved by everybody that knows her. She's such a sweet girl. She's funny," end quote. Despite Carly's move, Lindsay said she was still extremely close with her daughter, saying, quote, "We were literally best friends. She could talk to me about anything," end quote. Carly's early teenage years were pretty typical. She had a group of close girlfriends, and they had sleepovers and did all the other normal teenage activities. She liked to dance and had an after-school job at the title company where her stepmother also worked. Carly was a student at Bishop Union High School. Not long before she disappeared in August 2018, the family moved a little north of Bishop to an even smaller community called Chalfont in the Chalfont Valley of Mono County. This is remote, high desert country near the Nevada line. Highway 6 runs through it toward the state border, which is about 30 miles away. The move didn't disrupt Carly much because she was able to stay in the same school district.
I was going to ask that.
Yeah, exactly. Because, yeah, moving like when you're 16.
Yeah, that's a huge deal.
A huge deal. But like I said, she stayed in the same school, so it really didn't end up making much of a difference. People Investigates did an episode on Carly's case, and in it, you can see their neighborhood. It is literally a subdivision that looks as though it was dropped in the middle of the desert, surrounded by mountains. As someone who primarily grew up on the East Coast, the vastness of the area around her little neighborhood honestly freaked me out a little bit. And didn't I say that to you when we were in Nevada?
Yes.
Like how like
you don't
it
like kind
of scared
open spaces.
Me.
Yeah. Which is funny because you're claustrophobic too. So you've got to find that perfect sweet spot so that you're not freaked out by
anything. Yeah, there's something about I guess it's just like feeling so insignificant, you know, like just feeling like if something happened, like nobody's there to help you. It just, I don't know. It really scares me. In October 2018, Carly was 16 years old. She also had a boyfriend, a kid she went to school with named Donald Arrowwood III. According to her friends, Carly fell into the trap that a lot of teenagers fall into when they get into their first big relationship. She started spending most of her time with Don instead of them. Now, Carly wasn't completely isolating herself or anything like that, but it was enough that her friends noticed the change. They also noticed that Carly seemed to be partying a little bit more. According to her friends, once Carly started dating Don, she also started smoking marijuana more frequently. So it sounds like it was something that Carly had already been experimenting with, but that it just was happening a lot more, you know, in 2018. And it actually was starting to affect her life. It got so bad that she came to school high and got caught.
Oh, that's not good.
No. And it led to her being placed into a disciplinary program at her school. And it's interesting. It sounds like it was a cross between in-school suspension and an alternative school, but it was located on her school's campus.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it wasn't something I had heard of before. But yeah. And her parents have said that like her grades had tanked. You know, she was definitely going through a rough patch. But by October, when we're talking about, they said she was on an upswing. You know, her grades had been improving. She was like going to this alternative school type thing. Mm-hmm. And she seemed to be doing better. I haven't really seen this verified, but Carly also reportedly had her driver's license by this time, but hadn't been driving in the weeks leading up to her disappearance. Now, I don't know if that was because she was being punished because of, you know, the whole school thing, or like if something was wrong with her car, you know, what the reason was behind that. But by October 12th, she was relying on other people for rides. On Friday, October 12th, 2018, Carly asked if she could go to her high school's football game with Don. Her parents said yes. Now, I believe the call was after school and like Carly hadn't come home yet.
Okay.
So Melissa asked her if she would need a ride home later, but Carly told her that Don would just drive her. So Melissa and Zach just went about their normal Friday evening. But what they didn't know at the time, but would soon find out, was that Carly never went to the football game.
Okay. Where did her and Don go?
They went to their friend James's house, where a small get-together was going on. You know, a lot of news articles have called it a party, but Don has said, he's like, it was not a party. It was like a few kids. She did smoke marijuana at the get-together, but shortly after, she began acting oddly. Don later told the Las Vegas Review-Journal, quote, "She got scared of the music. She got scared of me," end quote. Carly was panicking, and he took her outside to get some fresh air and try to calm her down. It didn't work, though, and Carly started saying that she needed to go home.
It sounds like the weed might have been laced with something.
Yes, that's definitely going to come up in a little bit, yeah. But I think it is important to say that Don and James, who were smoking the same weed, did not have any sort of reaction to it, other than, you know, just getting
just
high.
Just being high, sure. But, I mean, you know, people react differently to different types of drugs.
Oh, absolutely.
You know,
yeah.
It is actually pretty common for somebody to have, like, a bad trip if it were laced with acid or LSD or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, and then other people are fine.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's part of why drugs are dangerous, is because
you don't know how your body's going to react.
Yeah.
That was our Nancy Reagan moment.
I know. We're going to have another one here soon. Around 8:30 or so, she called Melissa in a panic and said that she wanted to leave. Melissa later told Dateline, quote, "She called me to come pick her up. I picked her up from town and just brought her home," end quote. But the ride home wasn't exactly uneventful. Melissa was on the phone with Carly as she was driving towards her and asked her where she was. Carly replied that she was booking it down Dixon Street. So she was just literally running down the street.
What?
Because she was terrified. Like, again, she was like in panic mode at this point. So it was dark by then. But when Carly saw Melissa's car, she beelined toward it and jumped into the back seat, like as if she was being chased, basically. They were about 10 or so miles from home. And on the way there, Carly kept on saying she was going to die in the car and like kept on yelling at Melissa to slow down. When they arrived home, Melissa said that Carly didn't even recognize her father. She was also pale and her pupils were dilated.
I mean, this sounds like a really, really bad trip.
Yeah, yeah. Carly admitted to her parents that she had lied about going to the football game, which, you know, obviously, pretty clear.
Yeah.
And that she had smoked marijuana that night. And according to widely reported accounts, in a final text to her boyfriend, she said she thought the marijuana had been laced with something because of how she was feeling. According to Melissa and Jack, that's kind of what they thought, too. After all, Carly had gotten in trouble for smoking marijuana before, but she had never acted like this. So Melissa decided to basically hang out with her and help her through it. She didn't think Carly needed to go to the hospital at that point, but was like kind of taking a wait and see attitude. And listen, we're going to talk a lot about Melissa and the things she said and did in this situation in this episode. And this is one thing that she's gotten a lot of flack for over the years, but I get it. You know,
not taking her to the hospital?
For not taking her to the hospital.
Because what are they going to do?
Yeah. Like, it seemed like it was not a good situation, obviously.
Sure.
But it didn't seem like a medical emergency.
No, it's not the same as, like, you know, ODing on cocaine or heroin or something
right.
like that.
Right, yeah.
Like, at this point, even if you take her to the hospital, all they're going to do is say, you got to wait.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think that was, you know, what Melissa and Zach were thinking. So they're like, okay, like, let's just keep her home, keep an eye on her. And just see how it goes, because obviously, like, you know, it could go badly and then,
sure.
you know, then they'll take her to the hospital or whatever. But they just didn't think it was necessary then. And I mean, I get that. And let's be real, too. Like at this point, as a parent, Melissa was also probably pretty pissed at Carly.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
I'm sure.
But obviously this is not the time to like give her a lecture or, you know, yell at her or whatever, because she's freaking out. Like, that's not the time. Like, you know, as a parent, you've got to just get her through this. Then you can have a conversation.
Right. Yeah.
So what Melissa decided to do was record Carly so that once she was, you know, over this and kind of thinking clearly again, and they had that conversation, she could let Carly hear herself and use this episode as a lesson about the dangers of drugs. So what she ended up recording was about 8 minutes of audio. Melissa put her phone in her pocket and pressed record. The full 8 minutes has never been released publicly, but we did get to hear a portion of it for the first time in that People Investigates episode. Here's the part that they played.
Do you want to take a shower? Did go make you feel better?
Mm-hmm.
No.
You're going to kill me.
Carly, listen to what you just said to me.
What?
You said you're going to kill me.
Don't kill me.
Why would I kill you? That's preposterous. That's ridiculous.
I'm eating the devil's lettuce.
You're eating lettuce that I just freshly chopped that I bought from the grocery store.
I don't know why. I'm just
Why you think it's the devil's lettuce?
Because I'm just thinking all these demonic stuff and I can't help it.
You're okay.
You wouldn't call them?
Why are you looking like that?
Well, you just said you wouldn't. Would you call them?
911? If for what reason? If there was ever something? If there was an emergency, yes, I would always call 911. Yes. I don't know. Just don't look at my face.
I have to look at you.
No, you don't. Is it because I'm ugly?
No, I'm not.
You're beautiful.
So what are your thoughts?
Well, I'm sure the internet went crazy over, you know, her saying that her stepmom's going to kill her.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I did not take it in that
literal
way.
Sense.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I think I didn't either. That to me was very much like, you're going to kill me. Like, you know, you're going to be so mad at me.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Not like you're going to literally murder me.
Right. But you're feeding me the devil's lettuce.
Devil's lettuce.
Like, what?
Yeah. And you can hear Melissa is like exasperated at points. And I mean, I get that. Again, like as a parent of teenagers, like I get that. Like I get the like, oh my God, like I can't deal with this right now.
This is probably also the most that she's talked to her stepmom in months.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we've got teenagers. They barely talk to us. And if they're, you know, pissed off at us, they definitely don't talk to us.
Yeah.
But then, you know, in a drugged out haze of babbling shit, like mm-hmm. I'm sure it's exhausting.
Yeah, exactly.
And you can hear it because her like the things that she's saying, it's like unfiltered thoughts just coming through because mm-hmm. she jumps from the devil's lettuce to I'm ugly to you're gonna kill me, you know what I mean? It's
it's
all over the place.
Yeah.
So being a sober person around that,
yeah,
and like trying to calm her down, it's like I can only imagine what Melissa was going through.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I can only imagine what both of them were going through.
Oh, I know. But, yeah. Know,
for Melissa to be a parent and being around that probably for hours.
It was.
Yeah.
It was. So according to Melissa, Carly didn't want to or wasn't able to go to sleep. So she stayed up with her in her room. She said that Carly spent the night going from paranoid to manic.
Yeah.
One minute, she wanted to paint her toenails, and the next, she was afraid she was dying. Melissa also said that she was doodling on a piece of paper, and at one point said she wanted to go to church and read the Bible.
Okay.
Melissa and Carly were also texting Dawn throughout the night. I think more Melissa than Carly. Like, Carly sent that text that I mentioned about thinking that the weed was laced. Now, there is a timeline of Melissa's texts to Dawn that is floating around the internet that hasn't been fully verified, so please take it with a grain of salt. Because, like, I haven't seen the actual screenshots of the texts. I think these texts came from Dawn. So, Dawn was 17 at the time, and because he was underage, reporters weren't talking to him. He wasn't giving interviews about this. But a year later, around the one-year anniversary of Carly's disappearance, he was 18 and did speak to the press. So that's when he gave that quote, you know, she was afraid of the music, she was afraid of me. That was from 2019.
Okay.
So he was of age, like, oh, the articles were even omitting his name, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
But in 2019, he did start talking a little bit publicly about this. And so I think these texts came from him. And he was talking to like a blogger or somebody like that. And I think he showed her the texts. But again, you got to take it with a grain of salt. But it does kind of fit with what we do publicly know. So at 1:27 a.m., Melissa texted Dawn, please pray. And in an interview with Fox News, Melissa said, quote, from Friday evening to Saturday, we had several texts. I told Donald, please pray one time, end quote.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying. I think that these texts are pretty valid. I just like can't 100% say. According to the text summary I've seen, she then texted him, Donald, at 2:12 a.m. At 5:16, he responded asking if Carly was okay, to which Melissa replied, no, not really, at 5:30. But there's one more text that really raised eyebrows. At 8:28 a.m., she texted him, I think it was more than weed. She is acting like she's on meth, end quote. Dawn replied, is she with you? But it doesn't seem as though Melissa replied to that. Now, just keep that in mind for what I'm about to say next. So getting back to the 5:30 text real quick, where she said, you know, no, not really, she's not okay. Melissa said that Carly was finally sleeping by that point, and Melissa then dozed off as well. But when she woke up sometime after 7:30, Carly was gone.
Okay, so Carly is gone as of 7:30, and then she sends a text around 8:30 to Dawn.
Yeah, and a lot happens in the meantime. But this is also the second version of the story that Melissa told. Starting a business is hard, but Shopify makes it simpler. All the tools you need to launch are already included and ready from day one. I know I have a lot of ideas in my head, and it's so hard to execute them, but Shopify's templates and AI tools will get you a stunning site up and running with no coding needed. What I love about them is how much they really try to streamline and improve the customer experience. Shopify checkout means that more customers actually buy, and returning ones can do it in a single click. And Shopify's there to support you as you're building your site. If you've got questions, their built-in AI assistant Sidekick is ready to help you build, troubleshoot, and just keep moving. Shopify powers millions of businesses worldwide, from household names like Mattel and Gymshark to small businesses just getting started. Shopify makes it easier than ever to have a beautiful functional site for your business. All you need is the idea. Shopify handles the rest. Start your free trial at shopify.com/ATTWG. That's shopify.com/ATTWG to start your free trial. Shopify.com/ATTWG. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. Every true crime story has money somewhere in the mix. The motive, the pressure, the moment everything goes wrong. Teaching your kids about money isn't just smart parenting, it's protection. Because today, money doesn't live in a vacuum. It's tied to where your kids go, how they move through the world, and what happens when something goes wrong. Greenlight is a debit card and app for families, but it's more than just a money tool. It's a safety net for teaching kids about money while also helping protect them before bad habits, bad actors, or real-world risks take hold. We've been using Greenlight for our older kids for years. We are such big fans of this product. It makes giving them allowances easy, and we know where their money is going. Start your risk-free Greenlight trial today at greenlight.com/ATTWG. Don't wait to teach your kids real-world money skills. That's greenlight.com/ATTWG to get started. greenlight.com/ATTWG. Your body is already sending you signals, and for me, the signals are loud. The afternoon crashes, the plateau at the gym, the sleep issues that won't resolve. Jevity helps you look under the hood and actually address them. Jevity is the first all-in-one precision health membership that goes beyond the traditional healthcare system, which is designed to react, not to prevent. You go in once a year, get a basic panel, and here, everything looks fine. But fine is a low bar. It means nothing is critically wrong right now. Not that something isn't coming around the corner. Heart disease, metabolic dysfunction, hormonal decline, these don't show up overnight. They develop quietly, sometimes for years, while the system tells you that you're healthy. With your Jevity membership, you get a dedicated three-person care team, including a longevity specialist and clinician, to guide your health journey. You get full-body testing beyond blood work, including gut microbiome analysis, advanced genetic testing, cancer screening, and more. Right now, we're offering our listeners 20% off your purchase if you go to our link, gojevity.com/gone, and use code ATTWG. That's gojevity.com, gojevity.com/gone to get 20% off your purchase with promo code ATTWG. About a week after Carly's disappearance, Carly's family was interviewed as part of Dateline's Missing in America series. In that article, this is how the morning of October 13th was described. Quote, "The next morning, around 5:45 a.m., Melissa said she went through her usual routine of opening the kids' doors and saying good morning to them. She told Dateline she saw Carly in her bed at that time. Melissa said she then went back to sleep for a little bit. But when she woke up a little bit later and opened Carly's door again, Carly was nowhere to be found," end quote.
So she's waking her kids up at 5:30 in the morning? Like, for that's, sorry.
No. First. No, that was my first thought. So that Dateline article, the Missing in America article, was the first article I read on this case. So, like, I didn't know a whole lot about it when I read that. And that was my exact first thought was, 5:45 is really early to get up and wake all your kids up, you know, because I'm thinking like it's a school day and, you know, but then I'm like, you know, well, I guess some kids have to get up that early for school or whatever. But October 13th was a Saturday. So that was like, wow, what the hell is she doing at 5:45 in the morning?
Yeah.
Waking all her kids up.
Yeah.
So it turns out it didn't make sense because, according to what Melissa later said, that's not what happened at all.
So was she the one that was saying this in that interview, that first interview?
Yeah.
That she was waking, that she woke the kids up at 5:30 and yep. that's when she saw...
5:45, but yeah, yeah.
5:45, and that's when she saw Carly asleep.
Yes. So she saw Carly in bed at 5:45, apparently. But when she...
woke up later.
Yeah. So then she went back to bed, woke up later, went back, and Carly was gone.
But she just said later. She didn't give like a time frame of, you know, when that would have been.
Not at that point in that article, no.
Okay.
Later, she said it was 7:30. Okay. And that... that's not how she woke her kids up at all.
Okay.
It turns out Melissa just inexplicably made that up for the Dateline interview. Now, she was, of course, confronted about her changing story, both by reporters and by people online. So she has addressed this a few times. And, you know, every time she's addressed it, she basically said the same thing. So here's what she said in a Facebook post. Quote, "We were told not to release any information, and I just shouldn't have done the interview at all. After the interview ended, I called law enforcement, and I was told we could generally speak about her disappearance if we wanted to, but that choice is yours, and they didn't recommend talking to media. So I called Dateline and messaged, but it was too late." End quote.
Okay, but that still doesn't
explain... that still doesn't make any goddamn sense.
Yeah, it doesn't explain the difference in the story.
No, it doesn't.
Or why she would have made that up.
Yeah, like, why are you lying about that specific thing and then calling police afterwards and then saying, oh, and then calling Dateline and trying to retract it? But it's like, okay, but you, before you even talked to the police, you were just making up the story. Why?
To establish a timeline.
Well, but it's so strange because it's like, I mean, yeah, it is. But like, her second story makes her look better than her first story, because in the story, she, in the version of the story she told Dateline, she basically just told Carly to go sleep it off
mm-hmm.
and went and checked on her in the morning. In her second version of the story, she stayed up with Carly all night and took care of her. If that's what actually happened, because she said straight out, I lied about that on Dateline. So if the Dateline story is the lie, why are you making up a lie that makes you look worse than the truth?
I don't know.
I still don't understand it. So like I said, Melissa has stated that she lied to Dateline, but her story about what happened on the morning of the 13th has stayed pretty consistent. She said that it was around 7:30 or 7:45 when she realized that Carly was gone. And they quickly realized that it appeared as though Carly had left on her own accord. There were no indications of forced entry into the home, and no one heard any commotion. However, Carly left behind essentially everything a person needs: her cell phone, her glasses, her clothes, her money. She apparently just walked out into the cold desert with nothing.
So what was her what was Melissa's reaction at this point? At what point did she start freaking out? Because, like, you know, a normal day, that would be unusual in and of itself.
Right.
But you just had a very long night with your stepdaughter who was basically having a psychotic break due to drugs.
Yeah.
And then suddenly she's not there. So what did she do?
So it sounds like Melissa was just thinking, okay, maybe she went outside to like get some fresh air or whatever, you know? So she looked inside the house at first, of course.
Sure.
Then she like looked in the backyard, you know, she looked around the house, but didn't see her. So that's, I think, when she really started to panic. So she woke Zach up, and this is what she told Dateline in that original interview, which, you know, like, hopefully this is true. I don't know. But she said, quote, "I went back into our bedroom and I said, honey, she's not here. And he said, what do you mean she's not here? I said, she's gone. She's not in her room. She's not outside. She's not in the backyard. She's not anywhere." End quote. The two then hopped in their cars, so separately, and started to drive around looking for Carly. So at this point, it's like around 8, give or take. In the People Investigates episode, Zach described driving up to a high point, hoping that he could spot Carly down below, because they knew she was on foot, because she didn't have a car.
Right.
They obviously had their cars, you know. Now, in the People Investigates episode, the camera crew went with him to like where he said he looked. And it does give an amazing view of the entire area around their neighborhood. But he didn't see Carly. So after driving around and not finding her, Zach called Carly's mother, Lindsay, to tell her that she was missing. According to Lindsay, that call came at 9:35 a.m. So yeah, they looked for her for about an hour, hour and a half, and then called Lindsay.
And there's no time difference between where they live?
No, because I think Lindsay was in Nevada.
Okay.
And I, from what I understand, I think she lived like 150 miles away or, you know, so yeah, it was 9:35 a.m., so about an hour, hour and a half. According to Lindsay, Zach told her that Carly was gone. She later told Dr. Phil that when he said the word gone, she didn't think missing, she thought dead. She said, quote, gone to me is a huge red flag and it has never sat easily with me, end quote. Once Zach filled Lindsay in on everything that had happened the night before and that morning, she urged him to call 911, which he did when he hung up with her at around 10 a.m. At some point during this, they also called Don, probably to see if he had come and gotten her.
Mm-hmm. Smart.
Right. Now, he hadn't, but when he realized what had happened, he went over to the house. So this is where I want to go back to that text that Melissa sent him at 8:28, where she said, I think it was more than weed. She's acting like she is on meth. People have pointed to this because, like, that was right in the middle of the time when they were supposedly frantically
searching for her. Right. She said she is acting like she is on meth.
Yeah, which and doesn't mention like, oh, hey, also she's missing.
Right.
The thing that I can say that like I think could make that make sense is if the phone call to Don happened before that text. If Melissa called Don, you know, hey, is she with you? He says no. She tells him, yeah, she's missing. They hang up. And then she texts him, I think it was more than weed. She's acting like she's on meth. In her mind, I can see her thinking like she's out here somewhere.
Yeah.
Wandering around acting crazy. And that's why she didn't mention that Carly was missing, because she had told Don on the phone that Carly was missing.
Yeah. I mean, if that timeline holds up.
If that timeline holds up. And that's the thing. I don't have a timestamp of that phone call.
Right.
So if that phone call happened after that text, then yeah, that doesn't make any sense. And that's incredibly weird. But he did reply, is she with you? So that doesn't make sense. But there wasn't a response to that. So it could have been, I think it was more than weed. She's acting like she's on meth. Like, I'm looking for her. I'm thinking she's out here wandering around acting crazy. Don says, is she with you? Instead of texting him, that's when she calls him.
Sure. Or the phone call happened. She sends that text message and Don gets confused. Like, wait, is she with you? Like, as in, did you find her?
Oh, yeah. Because you're saying like she's acting this
way.
She
is acting.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. So that could be it, too. So I think out of three possible interpretations, two of them make sense.
Yeah.
One of them doesn't.
Right.
We just don't know which is correct. Don drove over to the house once he finally realized what was going on. He has reportedly said that when he went over that morning, he saw Carly's phone on her nightstand. But Melissa and Zach have maintained that they found it on the kitchen island, and it had been there the entire time.
Okay.
So I don't know what that means, if anything.
Well, it would be strange if it was on the kitchen island, given that wasn't she texting Don the night before?
Yeah, but I think she stopped texting him relatively early. So I think it could make sense that she texts him, but then for most of the night, her phone was away from her in the kitchen. But Don says he swore he saw it on her nightstand. So it's just a thing. Like, I don't know if that's an inconsistency. I don't know if somebody is mistaking. Yeah. But I don't know. Deputies from the Mono County Sheriff's Office came out and started an investigation. Melissa gave them a description of Carly and showed them a recent picture. She told them that Carly was wearing skinny jeans and a sweater. So the cops then began to canvass the neighborhood on their own. Now, if your suspicion at this point is that Carly never left the house that morning, What deputies quickly uncovered does seemingly prove otherwise, though the inconsistencies persisted. I'm really excited to tell you, we've got another banger from Kensington Publishing and author Noelle W. Eiley, who wrote Ask for Andrea. Her new book, Gray After Dark, is incredible. It's a thriller that's inspired by a real crime, the 1984 abduction of Olympic biathlete Carrie Swenson, who was kidnapped and left stranded in the wilderness by her attackers. The story follows Miley, an injured Olympic hopeful who's spending the summer training in Idaho's remote Frank Church Wilderness when she's abducted during a morning run. Suddenly, she's trapped in an off-grid cabin, miles from help, forced to rely on her athletic training, instincts, and sheer determination to stay alive. This book doesn't come out till June 30th, but I was so excited to get an early copy. And what I loved is it's not just a thriller about escaping a captor. It's also a battle against wilderness itself. Miley's stuck in the woods and realizing that surviving one more day is far from guaranteed. So if you're a fan of Freda McFadden, Karen Slaughter, John Mars, or true crime stories, Gray After Dark absolutely deserves a spot on your list. As a lifelong vegetarian, eating healthy isn't a willpower problem for me, it's a setup problem. Until I found Factor. I work from home, so theoretically I could be cooking my own meals every day, but the truth is I don't. So ever since I've been using Factor, it's really been a game changer because now I can actually eat healthy at home with very little effort. Plus, Factor has meals that are built around your goals, whether it's weight loss, overall nutrition, more protein, GLP-1 support, the list goes on. And what I love is that they're fresh and never frozen. They have over 100 rotating weekly meals, including newly launched ready-to-eat salads. I've talked before about the miso edamame salad. It's incredible. If you're ready to get started, head to factormeals.com/ATTWG50off and use code ATTWG50off to get 50% off and free daily greens per box with new subscriptions only while supplies last until 9/27/26. See website for more details. You should never have to choose between a home that looks great and one that's actually livable. Between pets, kids, spills, some of which are done by my kids, many of which are done by me, the new Ruggable All-in-One Rug delivers premium design with the peace of mind of being machine washable, stain resistant, and non-slip. I came to the conclusion long ago that I need machine washable rugs in my home. And Ruggable has the most beautiful designs, whether it's vintage inspired, neutral, modern, whatever your style is, you will find it at Ruggable. They're stain resistant for everyday spills, but they have a high quality look and feel. And most importantly, they're durable and built for your life. Refresh your home at Ruggable.com. Get 10% off your first order site-wide with promo code ATTWG at Ruggable.com. That's Ruggable.com and use code ATTWG at checkout. Three different people reported seeing a girl matching Carly's description that morning. The first was a retired police officer named Richard Eddy. He told the Las Vegas Review-Journal that he was sitting in his hot tub room around 6:45 or 7 a.m., enjoying a cup of coffee, when he saw a tall, slender female with long hair walk by. He said, quote, she was looking up, looking around at the sky, end quote, and she was carrying a piece of paper. Now, this is odd for a few reasons. One, it was early in the morning, so it was strange to see a teenager out walking around. He was like, we don't really get kids walking around out here. But more alarmingly was how she was dressed. Unlike Melissa's account, Richard said that the girl he saw was wearing a white t-shirt and gray sweatpants. He noted this because the temperature was only in the 40s that morning, and she wasn't really dressed for the weather. Now, a reasonable explanation for this would be that he just saw somebody else.
Or Carly changed.
Right. He didn't know Carly, right? He just saw a young girl. But there was another witness, Kenneth Dutton. Kenneth lived down the street from the Goussets, and he knew Carly. He said that he saw Carly walking down the road toward Highway 6 shortly after Richard's sighting. He also said that she was wearing a white shirt, gray pants, and was holding a piece of paper. Then a third witness came forward. He has never been publicly identified and is just described as a woodcutter who was driving through the area. He reported seeing a girl matching Carly's description around 7:20 a.m. She was standing behind a barbed wire fence near Highway 6 and was wearing a white shirt and gray pants. So why are the witness accounts about what Carly was wearing different from what Melissa said? Melissa later told Nancy Grace that she only said Carly was wearing skinny jeans because that was what she usually wore, saying, quote, "I only said that because she always wears skinny jeans, so I just assumed she had her skinny jeans on," end quote. Now, the day before, when Melissa picked Carly up, she was wearing skinny jeans and a hoodie. This is confirmed by doorbell camera footage from her friend James's house. So maybe that was the outfit Melissa had been describing. But if she was up with Carly all night, you would assume that she would have known if Carly changed clothes. The other possibility is that Carly woke up, changed clothes, and then left, all without waking Melissa, who was sleeping in Carly's bed. Which, again, isn't impossible. Yeah. I don't know how heavy of a sleeper Melissa was. She was probably exhausted.
Right. So it's certainly possible.
It's certainly possible, but it's weird. Now, there was and is a pervasive theory online that the outfit discrepancy was because the person who the witnesses saw that morning wasn't Carly at all. It was Melissa. Online sleuths accused her of running around the neighborhood basically trying to make witnesses think they were seeing Carly when Carly was actually long dead.
Okay. That's a little bit of a stretch.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense for a number of reasons.
Well, the second witness, Dutton, is Kenneth Dutton?
Yeah.
Like, you said he knew Carly.
Right.
And not that I have any idea what Carly and Melissa look like, but they're not mother and daughter.
Yeah.
It's stepmom and stepdaughter. So, like, it's reasonable to assume that they probably don't look that much alike.
They don't. And those are the two big things, right? The biggest, you're right, being that the second eyewitness knows Carly, knows the whole Goosey family, in
right.
fact.
So he'd be able to tell one from the other.
Exactly. Like, he wouldn't see Melissa and get confused and think it's Carly. The other thing is, you're right. I mean, Carly, Melissa, they both have like long brown hair, but they don't actually look alike. They have totally different body types, too.
Right.
Like, they are not people that even from a distance you would mistake for one another. You know, going back to Richard Eddy, the first one, right? Because Carly or the girl, you know, whoever he saw was a good distance away from him. So you could say, like, okay, somebody comes to him and says, hey, did you see anybody? Like, we've got this missing girl. And he's like, oh, yeah, I did see a girl. Mm-hmm. Like, whatever. But then if he was shown a picture of Carly, it's very fucking clear that that's not her.
Right.
You know, if it's Melissa, you know
right.
what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's very clear, right? There's just, I just don't see that making sense at all. And then if that was Melissa's plan, why would she tell police a different outfit? Like,
right.
if Melissa's dressing up in gray sweatpants and a white T-shirt to go prance around pretending she's Carly, tell right. the police she was last seen wearing gray sweatpants and a white T-shirt.
Yeah.
Don't draw attention to yourself by giving them a totally different outfit. Like, that doesn't make any sense. That's not helping your subterfuge.
Right.
Like, so that just doesn't add up at all. The Bonneau County Sheriff's Office, led by Sheriff Ingrid Braun, led the search, which was substantial. Investigators used dogs and helicopters to canvass the region along Highway 6 near White Mountain Estates Road and well beyond it. The FBI also became involved. Sheriff Braun was also interviewed for the People documentary, and she said that they pulled Zach and Melissa's cell phone records to make sure they were actually out driving around where they said they were out driving around that morning. The official ground search lasted for a week, and other than the eyewitness accounts, no physical trace of Carly was found. But the suspicion around Zach and Melissa has persisted for years, and the people who loved Carly began to disagree publicly about what had actually happened to her. There were broadly two camps, and they fall along family lines. Carly's mother, Lindsay Fairley, has openly questioned Zach and Melissa's story. Her belief, which she has stated publicly, including on the Dr. Phil show, is that Carly may have died of a drug overdose that night inside of the home. She told Dr. Phil, quote, I believe my daughter had a drug overdose, and I believe it because she was asking for help. And I believe very early morning, Melissa saw her with her eyes open, and I think that's when my daughter passed, end quote.
Okay, but why cover it up? It's not like they were supplying the drugs.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's a teenager that's on drugs. Like, why would you cover that up?
You know, fear, desperation. Yeah. And, you know, again, where that line where she says, I believe it because she was asking for help. She's referring to that part of the audio recording
where she says, are you going to call 911?
Yeah. And she interpreted that as she was asking Melissa to call 911 and Melissa was refusing.
I didn't get that sense.
Yeah. Well, especially because Melissa said, like, hey, if I need to, of course I'll call 911.
Yeah.
But, like, we're not calling 911 now. Lindsay has said that she has, quote, every right to question their actions, end quote, because in her words, their, quote, behavior surely makes me question what happened that night, end quote, which does make complete sense to me.
Oh, I agree. I mean, look, you know, here you have a grieving mother who is 100 plus miles away when all of this was going on. And yeah, there's a lot of inconsistencies with their statements, but I don't think anything that they said necessarily implicates them in any way. And like, honestly, and I might be jumping the gun here, but like the fact that we have three witnesses that say that they saw Carly outside of the house.
Yeah.
And the police already verified that with cell phone records that stepmom and dad were out searching for her. To me, that kind of clears them. Inconsistencies or not.
Yeah. There's just like so many inconsistencies that like, I don't know that I can really go that far, but because like, it's just nothing makes sense, you know, like it just everything is so bizarre. But no, I mean, I definitely don't think that this points to Carly dying of a drug overdose in the house. Now, Lindsay eventually ended up retaining a private investigator, which, again, totally understand
yeah,
as well.
Fine.
She also accused Sheriff Braun of bungling the investigation, wrote a letter to the department asking for her to be removed. Like, I get all of that.
Yeah.
And one point that her private investigator made, which I think is absolutely a valid point, is that the sheriff's office didn't do a good enough job searching the house. So, for instance, they didn't take the linens from Carly's bed and examine them. Because again, if Lindsay's theory is correct, Carly died of a drug overdose, there would be traces of that on her bed linens. Like there's a possibility that you could tell if there had been a dead body in that bed.
Yeah.
But none of that was ever examined. That doesn't mean there was a dead body in that bed.
Right.
But it would have been great if we could have definitively known. And again, when you're a parent and you have a situation like this, like any unknown, any missed opportunity is going to haunt you.
Absolutely. And I am not blaming her mother whatsoever. I just think the fact that you had witnesses that saw her, one of which knew who she was.
Right.
After all of this is taking place outside of the home, to me, that in and of itself is like, okay, Whatever happened. Yeah, whatever happened, it didn't happen in the house.
Right. Yeah, and it didn't happen overnight.
Right.
And Zach and Melissa have consistently maintained that they have no idea what happened to Carly. They said that she walked out of the house on her own while in a paranoid state, and, you know, they've cooperated with the search. Melissa has at times said that she believes Carly was abducted. They've also participated in television specials like Dr. Phil and People Magazine Investigates, in part to push back on the rumors swirling around them and to keep attention on finding Carly. And it also needs to be said that authorities have not publicly named any suspect in Carly's disappearance. And Mono County Sheriff Ingrid Braun has bluntly acknowledged the lack of progress, telling reporters, quote, we are no closer to finding Carly, end quote. So the suspicion that you see online directed at the family is not the same thing as suspicion from the police. That said, there's one development that we can't really leave out because it's an actual thing that happened. And it really didn't do much to make Zach and Melissa look better. On February 11th, 2021, Carly's father, Zach Gousset, was arrested by the Mono County Sheriff's deputies and charged with a felony count of corporal injury to a spouse. In other words, domestic violence. He posted a $50,000 bond and was released. According to the Mono County District Attorney's Office at the time, he was scheduled for a court hearing that May, but no other details were released publicly. Now, of course, that doesn't in any way establish that Zach had anything to do with Carly's disappearance. That was an incident that happened 3 years later. But there have been allegations that both Zach and Melissa have dealt with addiction issues of their own. Lindsay has also accused Zach of getting violent with her after drinking while they were married. While that does add another layer to this story, you know, saying that there perhaps was violence within the home, there was, you know, there was some instability perhaps, that, again, doesn't mean that they did anything to Carly that night.
Right. It's not a smoking gun.
No, not at all. And I should also point out that according to Melissa's social media posts, she and Zach both got sober shortly after this 2021 incident. Late last year, and I think in 2024, I saw Instagram posts, different Instagram posts, where she was celebrating both of their sober anniversaries. For years, the various reported sightings of Carly, including a wave of them driven by a TikTok account in early 2021 that some believed showed her, were chased down and came up empty. The Mono County Sheriff's Office even publicly addressed the TikTok theory, posting in January 2021 that while there was a resemblance, they had confirmed with Carly's family that the girl in the videos was not her. So what it sounds like, I didn't dive too deeply into that whole thing.
Didn't want to go down a TikTok hole?
I didn't. I watched a few of the videos, and the girl does look like Carly. And from what it sounds like, once people started saying stuff like that in her comments, she was kind of like playing it up a little bit. And, you know, making it seem like, oh, maybe it is me. Like, you know, like maybe I'm in danger. I'm being held against my will kind of things.
Oh, whoa, wait. I thought somebody like saw somebody that resembled her. So this girl was in the comments of her own TikTok was being told that she looks like Carly.
Yeah, yeah. So like she was just some girl making TikToks, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then people started commenting like, oh, my God, you look like Carly Gousset, like this girl who went missing. You know, blah, blah, blah. And then she would make other videos making it appear that, you know, she might be in danger and like, you know, saying that she might need help and things like that.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. But then
fucked up way to get likes on your social media.
I know. And then eventually after God, I think probably after the cops like contacted her, she's like, oh, just kidding, guys. Like, yeah, it was just a whole thing. But then came a genuinely new lead, the first one in a long time that investigators seemed to take seriously. On that episode of People Magazine Investigates and in subsequent reporting by the Las Vegas Review-Journal, Mono County investigator Jason Pelichowski, who's now the lead investigator on the case, revealed that in March 2021, his office received a call from a witness. The witness claimed that they had seen Carly at a party in Tonopah, Nevada. Now, Tonopah is a historic mining town and the seat of Nye County, about 100 miles from Chalfont Valley, straight up Highway 6 across the state line. According to the witness's account, Carly had been picked up along Highway 6 and driven to Tonopah, and something happened to her there at a party. The witness reportedly said that they'd been afraid to come forward sooner because they were a former drug user and didn't want to get into trouble. Based on the information given by this witness, investigators said that they were able to identify the make and model of the vehicle allegedly involved.
Oh, wow.
They located that vehicle and processed evidence from it. Investigators have also indicated that there's a person of interest connected to this lead, I'm assuming the owner of the vehicle,
yeah,
but that nothing further could be released to the public. Sheriff Braun confirmed to the Review-Journal that the Tonopah lead was actively under investigation, with her office working alongside the FBI. The witness account is still a single witness account from someone who waited a couple years to come forward, but it is the only lead I'm aware of that put investigators onto a specific vehicle and a specific person of interest. There's been some maybe misinterpretation around this lead as well, because I've read online people thinking that he said that he saw Carly at a party in 2021. And they're like, well, it's 3 years later. Like, what do you mean she was at a party in 2021 and then something happened to her?
Yeah.
But I don't think that. My interpretation of it is that
in 2021, he came forward about something that happened
back in 2018.
Right.
So I think he's saying she was picked up on Highway 6 on October 13th, 2018.
And taken to a party.
Yeah. And something happened to her there. But again, police really were not giving a lot of details, so
it's the first lead in a 8-year-old case.
Right. Well, yeah, at that point, it was like a 3-year-old case, still. So yeah, now let's talk about theories. Like, what happened to Carly Gousset? Now, theory one is the one that for a long time was treated as the most likely one, that Carly, in the grip of an acute drug-induced paranoia or psychosis, walked out of her house at dawn, disoriented, and met with some kind of misadventure in the harsh, high desert terrain. It could have been exposure, a fall, or simply getting lost.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the evidence for it is the genuinely frightening mental state that everyone agrees she was in that night, the early morning sightings of a disoriented girl walking, and the fact that she left without any of the things a person would leave with,
right,
if they're in the right mind. And of course, she was not dressed properly for the weather, which is dangerous. The enormous problem with this is that the terrain was searched intensively with dogs and helicopters and the FBI and months of efforts by her own father. So like I said earlier, the official ground search lasted for a week, but Zach said he drove around for months looking for any trace of her, but like nothing was found, not a piece of clothing, you know, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And listen, people do die of exposure in the deserts, but their bodies are usually found. Hers never was. And again, I really, you guys, like, I wish I had, you know, I could visualize this for you, because this really is the desert. This is not forest. This isn't mountains. I mean, it's surrounded by mountains, but like she wouldn't have been able to walk into the mountains from where she was in that time frame. And so from what I've seen, it just doesn't feel as though the terrain would have really hidden her that well, considering that people were looking for her almost immediately. She had about an hour or so head start on foot, and I just don't think she would have been able to get that far on foot to have something happen to her and never be found.
Unless there's abandoned mine shafts or something like that, wells in the area, something where she could have fallen into something.
I've never seen anything indicating that, but again, I just don't know the area that well, so it is a possibility.
You would think, though, that the local law enforcement would know about those.
For sure.
You know, and they probably would have searched those as well.
As much as you can. I mean, I think some of them, it's really hard to search, but you're right. I mean, and that's just not something that's really come up in anything that I've read about this case. Theory two is Lindsay's theory, that Carly never left that house alive, that she died in the home, possibly from an overdose, early the morning of October 13th. Now, there, of course, is no public evidence that proves this, but it persists because of the many things that don't add up and the many contradictions and outright lies from Melissa and Zach. However, we've already pointed out the main problem with this theory. If Carly never left, then the multiple independent reports of a girl matching her description walking toward the highway that morning would have to all be wrong somehow.
Right.
Or like be a conspiracy.
Right. I don't buy it. I don't buy that theory.
Yeah. And honestly, like when I first started looking into this, I did buy it. Like that actually, I was like, I don't think she ever left the house. But once I got more into the witness accounts, especially when I found the second witness actually knew her.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, there's no way. There's no way that all three of them had such consistent accounts.
Right.
And got it wrong. Theory three is abduction, that somebody picked her up. And this is the theory that the Tonopah lead supports. There is a witness, the third witness, who said that she was near Highway 6.
Right.
And that 2021 witness says she was picked up on Highway 6. And so if the Tonopah lead is real, it would mean that Carly left the immediate area alive and that someone else was involved in whatever happened to her after that. It's a theory with the most concrete lead attached to it, but it's also the one we know the least about because obviously police are holding everything so close to the vest. And, you know, the problem with it that people have is that it wasn't a super well-traveled road.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, the odds of Carly going out that early in the morning and meeting some nefarious person.
Well, so I don't necessarily think that it was a nefarious person. Here you have a girl that's not in her right frame of mind.
Mm-hmm.
She's standing next to a highway. She's paranoid thinking that somebody's out to kill her or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, she's been running all night.
Yeah.
Who's to say she didn't like hitchhike out of there?
Oh, okay. So you're thinking, so your thought is that the person of interest, the car of interest, could have literally been a good Samaritan.
Who I mean, picked... I wouldn't say a good Samaritan, but not necessarily.
Maybe not a murderer.
Yeah.
So like, so
not
somebody
that was like, my lucky day.
Yeah. Okay. Know? So like they were just picking up a hitchhiker or alternately thinking they were helping a girl who clearly looked like she was in trouble, not dressed properly.
Yeah. We don't
needed to get off the side of the highway.
Doesn't always necessarily have to be the evil person that picks them up.
No, you're right. I mean, and that person very well could have taken her someplace
else.
Yeah. Someplace.
And who knows what else happened after that?
Yeah. She could have been picked up by a different person. She could have gone to a truck stop. She could have, like,
yeah,
done any number of things that then led to
ending
something
up in a
bad
party
happening.
In
yeah.
Tonopah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's a good point. So now police did set up a roadblock just to try to find witnesses who had possibly been driving that morning.
Mm-hmm.
And they did end up talking to several people who had driven in that area on that day around that time. Nobody reported seeing her, but, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean she wasn't there.
Right. She could have already been gone.
Yeah. This case is awful for a lot of reasons. Whatever happened to Carly, the future she was supposed to have was derailed that morning. Her disappearance was like a bomb that was set off in her family and set people who all loved the same girl against each other. Even a year in, like, it was bad between Lindsay and Zach and Melissa. Zach said in the People magazine thing, he's like, yeah, we agreed to do Dr. Phil, but the only way we would agree to do it is if we weren't on the same stage as Lindsay. So, like, they haven't been on speaking terms since shortly after her disappearance. I know that Kane is still close with Melissa and Zach. I don't know what his relationship is with his mother, Lindsay. Remember, Kane is her older brother.
Yeah.
He was already out of the house by that time. I think he was like 19 or 20 or something when this was all happening, maybe even a little bit older. It just really, like I said, dropped a bomb in the middle of everything. In the nearly 8 years since Carly went missing, the internet has turned a missing child into a true crime sport. Her grieving relatives are looked at as characters to be accused. And you know, I haven't really talked much about Lindsay in this, but, you know, she definitely hasn't come out of this unscathed either. But, of course, when it comes to Melissa and Zach, especially Melissa, like, I understand the suspicion. There are a lot of parts of this case that truly don't fit. But it's also worth remembering that the only two arrests that have come out of this entire saga were James, the friend whose house they were at on Friday night. He was charged with contributing to the delinquency of a minor for giving Carly the weed, which I think is kind of bullshit, actually. So, like, he was 18 at the time.
Yeah.
So, which I, like, why? Like, is that really what's important?
No, but that's what they could charge him with.
Of course, of course. But it's like that's really what we need to be doing out during this.
Right.
So anyway, he got charged with that. He got convicted. And by the way, I didn't even mention this. The police went to James, of course, very early on once they found the story. And they're like, give me everything you have. We need to test it. We need to figure out what she was on.
Yeah.
And so they tested the bong or like whatever they had been using. And only found marijuana. They found that it hadn't been laced with anything.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, which is crazy. So again, there's still a possibility she could have smoked it out of another thing that wasn't tested. There's a possibility that she could have just had a bad reaction, period. Because even if marijuana isn't laced with anything, like, that's been known to happen to certain people under certain conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the other arrest was Zach 3 years later for domestic abuse. But police have never named any suspects in Carly's actual disappearance. And the only person they've said is a person of interest is not anybody known to Carly. Carly Gousset was honored at what would have been her high school graduation, and Zach and Melissa accepted her diploma in her place. She would be 24 years old today. She should have a job, be living on her own. Maybe she would even be married. But instead, the question that has hung over that little stretch of Highway 6 since the morning of October 13th, 2018, is still exactly the same. Where did she go? Carly Gousset has been missing from Chalfant, California since October 13, 2018. She is a white female with brown hair and hazel eyes. At the time of her disappearance, she was approximately 5'7" tall and around 110 pounds. She was last seen wearing a white shirt and gray sweatpants. Carly was 16 years old when she went missing. She would be 24 today. If you have any information about the disappearance of Carly Gousset, please contact the Mono County Sheriff's Office at 760-932-7549, option 7, or the FBI. You can see all the sources for this episode along with photos and videos at our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook and at ATTWG Pod on Instagram and TikTok. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And we'll see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by me, Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketsa. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!